This is Sherry Russell. I'm sitting with Mrs. Betty Capon on May 6, 1982. Sun's going down outside. Okay, where and when were you born?
I was born in Pinedale, Wyoming on May 11, 1933.
Okay. How many sisters and brothers did you have? And how did you get along with each other?
I have one brother, Bob Dew. We used to fight as we were growing up. And then we went away to school when we were in the eighth grade. It was a boarding school. And being away from home, we became much closer to one another. And since then, we've been very close.
What types of games did you play in the summer?
Oh, we played kick the can, hide and seek, anti-eye over.
How do you play that?
Oh, that's where you each stand on, one of you stands on each side of a building, and then you toss a ball over the top of the building, see if the other person can catch it. And as you toss the ball, you say, anti-eye over!
Okay. What games did you play in the winter?
In the wintertime, we didn't have any structured games. We did a lot of skiing, snowshoeing. We built snow houses.
Sounds neat. Okay. When did you first start school, and how did you like it?
Well, I started school when I was five, because we had no school, and my mother subscribed to the Calvert course to teach my brother when he was six. That left me alone. I had nothing to do, and I was very much interested in learning. So I kept begging her to let me go to school. She wouldn't do it. So I started learning the material to prove to her that I was smart enough to go. And I did better than my brother. So finally she had to weaken and say, yes, you may go to school.
It was just like the stuff came through the mail and she taught it at home to you guys?
It was a correspondence course designed for mothers to teach their own children at home.
Where did you go to school in later years?
After the second grade, the district hired a school teacher to come in and teach us so that they could establish a public school there. So for third and fourth grade, we had a public school teacher in. Then when she quit, the district did not want to discontinue the school because they would have lost the funding. So they encouraged my mother to recertify, since she had been a teacher, and take the job as a public school teacher to teach my brother and I. So she taught us from fifth grade through seventh grade as public school. Then for the eighth grade, we went away to a boarding school in Utah. It was called Wasatch Academy at Mount Pleasant. From the eighth grade through our senior year, we attended school there and graduated from Wasatch Academy. After high school, I went to the University of Wyoming for 4 years and earned my BA degree. At that time, I thought I was all through with school. But after teaching a few years, I was encouraged to go back and get more training. I went to summer school at the University of Wyoming and also at the University of Colorado before I finally made up my mind to take it seriously and go to Denver University and get my master's degree.
And you've been in the school ever since. Okay. Was this your mom taught that little school in Pinedale?
This was on a ranch north of Pinedale, about 35 miles north. this is why we couldn't attend the city school, because we were 7 miles off the highway, so there was no way we could have reached a bus, even if there had been a bus, which there wasn't in those days.
Were there very many other students from around there that went?
No, just the two of us.
Oh, all that time.
There were other small schools in the area where you might find 2, 3, half a dozen students. That would be about it.
They hired one teacher for
each school.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. What type of work did your parents do?
They had a dude ranch, which they had built from scratch. My dad had built all the cabins, all the furniture, and it was a very well kept up dude ranch and was doing a good business when the Second World War came. At the time of the war, people could no longer travel. So my dad had to find other work to do. He helped in the hay field some. He did some timber work. Finally, he decided timbering was what he wanted to do. So he started cutting mine props for the coal mines in Rock Springs. Later, after the coal mines started closing down in Rock Springs, and there was no more market for mine props, he decided to open a sawmill. So he purchased the equipment and went into the sawmill business, which he did until he had to quit work.
Jack of all trades.
Mm-hmm.
What was your relationship with your parents?
Oh, I'd say very good. We were a very close family because there were no other people nearby. Mm-hmm. Our closest neighbors were about 2 miles away. So, as a family, we did many things together.
What types of recreational activities did you do together?
Well, in the summertime, there really wasn't a whole lot of time other than when we had the dude ranch. Bob and I used to go on the rides sometimes with our parents and the dudes, go on picnics. One big picnic that everyone enjoyed was usually the end of May, which was a Bronx community picnic. We lived in the Bronx area. Mm-hmm. And everyone there in the spring would get together for a large picnic, bring potluck, play baseball and hide and seek, kick the can, whatever games we could think of, pitch horseshoes.
A lot of holiday, close holiday togetherness, like.
Oh, yes and no. In the summertime, sometimes the people were too busy to actually observe holidays. Especially we on the dude ranch, because a holiday we might have special activities going for the guests. So when there'd be a branding or any special occasion when people weren't too busy otherwise, get together and have fun. Often the brandings and sometimes the haying seasons were a time for people to get together and work together as well as play together. In the winter time, there were no gatherings to speak of because it was too far to travel by foot.
When did you first start working and what was your first job like?
I started working the fall after my graduation from college. So it was the fall of 1954. When I had a teaching job at Superior, Wyoming. At that time, I was teaching English. It was very good. I enjoyed it, but it was also very hard because Superior was on its way down at the time. Some of the students were quite rowdy. It was a small school, so the teachers all had to share a lot of duties. Very busy, because we tried to provide many activities for the students. You might find yourself driving a bus or sweeping the floor or teaching class. But it was fun.
What was the pay like then?
I started teaching at $3,600 a year in Superior, which was extremely good for the time. The highest offer under that, which I had, was $2,800. And $2,800 was considered very good pay in those days.
Hmm. Sounds like they needed you. Were you and your family religiously active?
No, we weren't. We lived too far from a church to attend church, because the nearest one would have been in Pinedale, which was 35 miles distant. My father had no strict religious background. My mother was Episcopalian background on one side of her family, and Quaker background on the other, which was an odd mixture. So she merely tried to instruct us in the Bible and a belief in God. So we had no structured religious life.
When did you first move to Rock Springs?
I came here in the fall of 1959.
Did you find it very different from where you lived before?
No, because I had been in Superior for 4 years before and had enjoyed the people there, made many friends. When I left Superior, I went to Sheridan for a year. I had felt very lonely in Sheridan because it was a ranching community, many retired people, not very many young people around. So I was happy to come back to Rock Springs, where I found my old friends.
Okay. Where did you meet your husband, and when did you get married?
I met my husband when I came to Rock Springs to teach, because he came the same year. And he taught European history in the school district, and I was librarian. We taught together in the same school for several years, dated off and on, and finally in 1965, we decided we would get married. We were married in Phoenix, Arizona, because my parents were moving around at that time, looking for lower altitude.
Did you have any children?
No, we didn't.
What was the first library that you worked in?
The first library that I worked in was the one in Superior High School. It actually was very, very small. It was in combination with the study hall. It had been started by someone before my time, but there were very few books. The card catalog was minimal. We had a few magazines and an abridged reader's guide, but there was no large back volume of magazines for reference. I started because the school district there had offered me an extra month's pay if I would attend summer school and get training in library work. So this is where I got my interest. They did that for 2 years, and then I quit at Superior because the schools looked like they were about to close. And I went to Sheridan.
So you only got 2 years of training for the library?
When I was in Superior.
Oh, okay.
Then I went to Sheridan and simply worked for 1 year in the junior high school there. When I quit at Sheridan, I had made up my mind to go to Denver University full-time and get a master's degree. That did not happen, however, because on my way home from Sheridan in the spring, I had heard there was an opening at Rock Springs for a librarian. So I stopped in to ask about it and have an interview if possible. After inquiring about the job and making a date for an interview, I decided I would work in Rock Springs and attend Denver University in the summertime.
Okay. So you started as a head librarian, not just working as an aide or anything?
No, I was the librarian. Okay. I was the only person there.
Okay, in Superior, was anyone allowed to use the library or just the school children? Did it serve as a public library?
It was simply for the high school.
Hmm. What is one of the biggest changes in the library from when you started to today that you've noticed?
The biggest change that I have seen occurring has been from print materials to non-print materials, going from the old concept of a library as a place where you would find books, magazines, newspapers, to a place where you will find television sets, computers, tape recorders, video recorders, projectors, all kinds of equipment.
I guess that's how it got its name, Media Center now.
Yes, now they like to call them media centers.
Did you have any previous training on this new equipment that was coming in?
I took one audiovisual course at the University of Colorado in the summer of 1957. It was one of those survey courses where we were introduced to many different kinds of equipment. Hopefully after that we could run them.
Remember what all you learned. What do you think prompted this big change to the media?
Well, I think people began to realize that students learned in various ways. Some learned better through visuals than they did through the print. The companies began producing more films, more educational film strips. The quality became better as improvements were made on equipment. So I think it was a combination of factors.
What do you wish would have stayed the same from back in the old days?
I'm not sure that I think anything should have stayed the same, although it's been hard for me to accept the change to as much audiovisual material and equipment as we have today, because the machines used to worry me when I was a teacher. I didn't like to show films because the projectors didn't behave correctly. So it's been hard for me to accept the change and realize that now I'm the one who has to solve the problem when the teacher has trouble with the equipment.
What changes have you seen in library personnel, and why do you think these have come about?
When I first started working at the high school library in Rock Springs, I was alone. It wasn't necessary that I have any help at that time, because the study hall was in the library. So very few students could come in to use the library. So it was more a one-to-one basis, which was pleasant. After the study hall was moved out of the room, then classes could come in. or larger groups could come into the library and make use of it. This meant that I was dealing with more people throughout the day and many more larger groups, as well as trying to do the administration of the library. So within a year or two, I had an adult aide working with me. With the two of us, we were able to manage quite well. However, there are always duties which don't take much training that need to be performed. So we did enlist the help of students. We began having usually two student aides every period during the day. The student aides were able to check the materials in, check them out, put things away, keep the library tidied up. The adult aide did most of the filing, clerical duties, secretarial work, which freed me more to work with the students in instructing them in library usage and also helping them to locate the materials they needed. The school was a good deal smaller then than it is now, so it was possible to know most of the students in school. By knowing the students, knowing the books and other materials in the library, I could do quite a bit of reader guidance, that is, matching books to kids so that they could enjoy reading. And they would often come in and simply ask for a good book, which was a challenge. Today our school is quite large. It's impossible to know all of the students, let alone know their reading abilities and their interests. So even though we have student aides working and one adult aide and another half-time adult aide, I find that even with the additional personnel, it's hard to help the students with reader guidance. We do still try to keep up the help in finding materials for assignments.
Have you always cataloged the books yourself?
Yes, because I'm the only one that's been hired at the high school that has training in cataloging. And it's very difficult, I think, to teach cataloging to someone who is new at the job, unless you have a lot of time to spend with that person.
Have there been very big changes in the systems?
What do you mean by systems?
The way you catalog the books.
The cataloging systems? Yeah. There have been some changes throughout the years, and especially recently, there have been changes in the rules. We follow national or international cataloging rules. When I began, they were the American Library Association rules. Now they are expanded into what we call international rules, so that all libraries will be uniform in how their materials are cataloged. The rules, I think, are harder to use now than they were before. They are more specific. We at the high school and junior high and elementary levels don't have to be quite as exacting as you would in large university libraries or business libraries or the Library of Congress. So for us it isn't as much of a problem as it would be for some other libraries.
What advice would you leave to any future librarians?
First, I would recommend that anyone thinking about going into the field get as much education as possible, get a good broad base to your undergraduate education, because anytime you're in the library field and reference questions come to you, they could come from any area of knowledge. So the broader your base, the easier it is to deal with those questions. Secondly, if you get as much knowledge as possible in the library field, then you will be qualified to take jobs in many different kinds of libraries. In other words, I wouldn't limit myself to any one kind, like a school library or a public library. If you could get qualified, I would say go for the special library work, which is takes the most training. Then you could surely move into any one of the others: university, public, school, whatever. Also, I would recommend that anyone thinking of librarianship as a career take many business courses because of the administrative duties, and that they take all the computer science they could get, because our movement now is toward computerized libraries. The convention I attended recently, they are predicting that by 1995, homes will have home study centers where people will simply plug into their computer. And they will go to school more for the human touch than for the instruction, because the instruction they can receive at home. Knowing this, libraries will have to become computerized, and the people working in the libraries will have to know how to operate these computers